Hello and welcome to A-Team Podcast. Today we have special guest Mick Bilikonski. The team gets deep in discussion with Mick about autistic identity trauma, shamanism, attachment wounds, neuroqueer identity, and Bartleby, who would prefer not to. Thanks for listening.
Can you pull the door open a little more? I'm
going to
pull it now.
I haven't had different hair for a long time. So, Michael, glad you could join us.
Yeah.
Mick, let me introduce you to Michael Cantwell, who, like Tango, was a guest in season two. And then when we kind of revamped things, Tango and Michael were the two people I reached out to co-host this gig, and so we've been doing this more or less every week for a while. We took a six-week hiatus while Michael was in school because he wanted to study. Because you're here, and so this is new. We haven't all three of us talked to a guest before, so this is Michael's favorite part. We haven't done it in several months, but we should probably introduce ourselves.
That's because, probably a good idea.
Because you're the new guy. So I'll just say very quickly, I'm Robert Smythe. I live in Philadelphia. I'm one of the co-founders and co-hosts of A-Team Podcast. And I'm autistic. And I'm going to be 63 next week. And so I have been autistic for 63 years, though I've only known about it for 13. And life got instantly better once I knew. So there we are.
Ta-da. I'm Tango. I'm Tango. I'm based out of Berkeley. I'm freshly 32. Figured out I was autistic when I was 24. So it's been 8 years of knowing and figuring out what's going on and collecting real community and good friends and things like that.
Good set. Well said. I'm Michael. I'm currently living just outside Toronto. I had the great pleasure of, during COVID, having enough time to figure out that possibly there was something going on. And I got diagnosed a couple of years ago. It's been a up and down experience, mostly positive.
Cool. Well, really nice to meet the two of you, Tango, Michael, Robert. Thanks so much for having me back. I guess I can introduce myself a little bit.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm Mick Bilikonski. I learned I was autistic about 5 years ago. I have been working on figuring this shit out nonstop since then. Some people like the way I think about it, and like, I tend to think out loud on Twitter. And so I started just tweeting my processing, and it got a lot of people's attention and helped people realize, wait, me too, right? And so I was like, there's something valuable here. I'm a software engineer by trade, right? I'm not like a doctor or a psychologist. If I had been trained in those fields, I wouldn't actually understand autism any better than they do, right? Like, so I'm just some guy trying to figure stuff out. And I figured some stuff out, and it's pretty exciting.
I wonder if that's the unifying autistic experience, trying to figure shit out.
I have thoughts. Let me, I have gone down a rabbit hole. So I am going to tell you, you should visit the Public Neurodiversity Support Center, which is the website that I created and maintain, where I started publishing essays and guest essays. And I will also tell you that I have not really been doing a good job of maintaining it the last little while. I've been
classic
growing in other directions, and I recently turned a corner, and I think that, you know, okay, so the DSM was the wrong lens, right? And neurodiversity, yeah, it is a subset of biodiversity. Getting the diversity framing in there, that's important, yeah. That's not actually where we need to be having this conversation, though. There's a much bigger shift that needs to happen. So if y'all want to talk about that today, I'd love to talk about that. But
well, it's such an interesting topic.
Yeah.
Such an interesting topic. Let's drop it. What else are we going to talk about? Of course we're going to talk about that. I just got finished. You brought up the DSM. Last week, I gave a talk to at Widener University to the current cohort of PhD candidates training in occupational therapy. And it was very interesting because I had been brought there by the president of the student association for that cohort, because we'd gotten into a conversation about autism, and occupational therapists work with a lot of people who are autistic. But then it was interesting because, as she told me, and this is why we set up this whole thing, most of the people in this PhD program know nothing about autism except the DSM. And maybe not even the DSM. Actually, not even the DSM, because some of them were just quoting directly out of the out of their textbook. You know, it's a, you know, the marked by, you know, social defects, blah, 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 you know, all that pathology stuff. So it is, you know, it's like, on one hand, and then today somebody on Facebook posted something about Amazing Attorney Woo, that Korean show. Mm-hmm. And someone I know very well said, oh, but you know, it's the autistics are my best friends, you know, that kind of thing of just like, so, no matter how far I feel like I'm going in one particular direction, I feel like in the rest of the world, there's just so much work to be done. So why don't we figure out a better first step to take? Which I guess is a kind of a cue for you, Mick. What the hell are you talking about?
Up until about a week ago, I was going to tell this story very differently. So I'm going to... I offer coaching. I want to open with that. I offer free coaching. I'm free
coaching. Nope, can't hear.
Wait,
what's
Mick,
happening?
Something happened to your talk again.
We good?
Yep, yeah, you're good.
So I offer free and paid coaching to autistic and ADHD people who would like some support navigating this stuff. And the story that I tell the people, right, is, look, and by the way, I want to preface this by saying, I learned a lot of this theory from Tara Vance over at Neuroplastic, who is developing tons of resources about what I'm about to tell you, right? The thing here is identity trauma. The thing that happens to so many of us is that we don't actually have a good answer to the question, who are you, right? You have a supercomputer that's running in your head all the time, simulating literally the whole universe, multiple universes, right? You can answer any question from anyone about anything, even if you don't know anything about it. You're annoying that way, but you can say something interesting. But if somebody you care about turns to you and says, you love me, right? Your supercomputer throws a blue screen. Something just went wrong there. Why are you asking me? Wait, hang on. Why am I so uncomfortable? What's happening? Everybody I talk to is like, wait, how did you know that, right? And I tell them, you think that there's something about love that is weird or that you don't understand, and you're worried about that, but it's not love. You're not there. You're at the you. You're freaking out because you don't know how to answer that question, because you don't actually know who you are in a way that will allow you to. Weird how that's so many of us. Why is that? Tara Vance showed me, or go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, no, I was just going to say, I don't want to interrupt. Believe it or not, I don't.
So I'm telling this story, and I want to also say, this is not going to ring 100% true for everybody, right? This is one flavor of this experience, and so this helps a lot of the people I talk to. But the reason that, from birth, you're born, you have needs, right? Like, you communicate those needs by screaming. Somebody comes and takes care of the need, and things are good. But some subset of your needs, because you're autistic, are invisible. And people don't know what they are or how to meet them, and you can't communicate them. And so you're just a colicky baby now, right? or fussy or whatever. And you get older, you try to learn to talk. Oh, okay, listen, it's that my ears hurt when everybody's happy and playing. Oh, that's not, no, it's not too loud. This is fine. You're just a little scared. Tough it up, right? Okay. No, really, like, I'm older now and there's something wrong. This is agonizing. Please turn that down. What? It's normal, right? Now, instead of just the gaslighting, you start getting shame too. And every time you try to speak up for these things that you need, somebody says no. You should feel bad about even asking. So what do? On the one hand, you've got a part of you that's screaming, the lights are too bright, it's too loud, I can't pay attention in the ways you want me to, whatever it is, right? And on the other hand, you have everybody in your life that loves and cares about you telling you that's not real. And you're six. So how do you resolve that cognitive dissonance? You decide, all right, I'm going to trust my caregivers. I'm going to take all this shame they keep giving me and I'm going to wall off this part of myself that keeps screaming, right? That's not real. Fine, I'll convince myself that's not real. Except what you just did was sever your connection to your body, to your core self, as Tara Vance calls it. I think of this as like your embodied, axiomatic, somatic source of knowledge. You know shit in your body that you can't know in your head. Things like, who am I? Suddenly don't become infinitely recursive, expensive queries into your supercomputer. You just know. Right? And so you have to, like, once you figure this out, once you get back in touch with your body, it becomes another source of truth for another way of knowing. It's not telling you the same kinds of truths that your computer brain is telling you. It's telling you other kinds of truths. And yeah, this goes into like polyvagal theory, and it goes into like the somatic experiencing of different senses and all of this. But that's none of that's what I want to talk about today. Actually, what I want to talk about is shamanism.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Shamanism. I want to talk about shamanism.
Oh, okay.
Have you all done this on the healing yet?
Well, one of the things before we do that, there's a lot to go through. You know, in our first season, when Rafael Montesso and I were doing this together, we talked to a wonderful person named Marie Martinovich in New Zealand. And she was the first person to tell me, and I know other people have talked about this, but it was the first time I'd even contemplated it, that every autistic person grows up with trauma from the moment they are born. And it, in a lot of ways, has to do with what we were talking about, but she just put it really simply, which is no autistic person grows up with a peer.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's never anybody around to rarely. Well,
or if validate. Lucky,
you might find them, right? But
yeah.
There are smaller places where like neurodivergent people end up cloistered, and because they go on to have autistic neurodivergent kids, and like they do actually. I think it's called
Silicon Valley.
Places. I don't actually think I like it here at all.
Valley is the inverse of it, right? Because what you're talking about, cloister is the right word. You're talking about monasteries. That's where we have survived.
Mm-hmm.
Since the advent of imperialism, right? Since the advent of there's a right and a wrong way to be a person, those of us lucky enough to not know how to be a person the right way but not get killed would get together and be like, okay, we're going to just grow vegetables and make wine. And if anybody asks, we're praying real hard. They like it when we say that. But like, that's not what this is. This is an economic structure to allow collective autistic thriving.
Sure. I just getting back to what I was saying, though, because it's true, right? Sure. There are communities and all, but until someone enables you to join one of those because they meet you up with the other kids or whatever, until somebody finally understands that you are different, you and they continue in this, as you were saying, Mick, continue in this persistence that, you know, you're normal. Why aren't you normal? Right. So even if it's just the first 2 years, even if it's, you know, up till whatever, her point is there are so many things that go on in those first few years of life that are so important to be validated that when they're not, it's the trauma we will never get over. Or maybe we will with shamanism.
We will.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Here's why shamanism, right?
Any trauma can be gotten over.
Okay.
Speak. Okay. I resisted looking into this forever because I didn't want to be culturally appropriative. And then I was like, wait, what if I just went further back in time to where my people came from, right? Not Ukrainian shamanism, that's not a thing, but is there Scythian shamanism? Oh, it was a shamanic culture. Okay, permission. I can learn about this. What's a shaman? A shaman is somebody who can hear the spirits and has been called to channel them. If the shaman hears the call and refuses to accept it, the spirits will torment the shaman until the end of their life or until they choose to listen. The shaman, once they accept the call, falls into a deep sleep where the spirits rearrange their skeleton and put them back together, and they wake up and they're different. They can now do things that they didn't know they could do before. They can talk to the spirits. What is a spirit? Well, what's talking to a spirit? If only the shaman can see this person that he's talking with, what's that mean? Well, that just means the shaman's perceiving things a little differently than you are, and that's the metaphor or the language that we have for that perception. That shaman is noticing a relational pattern in nature or in the way these two people are interacting, or in the way you responded to a really innocuous comment. We just see it. You see it. Everybody on this call, you see it. And it's unique for each of us. But that's the value. Those things that you get gaslit out of believing that you notice from birth, you notice them. Those used to be called spirits. And if you don't give voice to the spirits that only you can see, that's a contradiction in who you are, right? If you don't accept all the parts of yourself, if you just ignore things you know to be true in your body, you're living a lie, and a part of you knows you're living a lie. And you're not going to be able to fix that problem with therapy or with medicine, right? It's not a medical problem. It's a spiritual problem. It's a contradiction in the story that you're telling yourself about who you are. That's what spirits are. So I'm going down this lens now, and I'm going to stop there and let y'all just interrupt me because I've talked for like 10 minutes straight.
Tango, you're the most spiritual of us, I think. How would you, like, what would you think of that? Of what he was talking about?
I mean, I agree with all of it. I just use different like terms and models and things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the misalignment, the trauma, like, yes, don't call me out.
Really, Michael? That was
very nice. Okay. My point of view would be that usually Tango would explain things like that in a way more, very similar theories, but with less added supernatural.
Yeah, so why am I going to the supernatural? That's weird. Aren't autistic
people supposed to be rational? I don't even call it supernatural. It's just literally a different rhetorical frame.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time, I'm kind of hearing in the kind of historical perspective that, because this is something I've always been fascinated by, seances, people who, you know, communicate or think that they do.
Rifters, yeah.
Some of them. I've been known to run a pretty good seance myself. But having met people who really are very good at reading other people, I know for a fact the reason that even stage magic works is that it is easier for human beings to believe in some kind of other thing than that a human being has, say, memorized thousands of phrases so that they and their partner can communicate and know what's going on in secret in front of everybody. Or that there was a great someone I knew at a party, met her at a party, she became a friend, but you know, she could read you. And it was funny because she was kind of reading somebody and she was telling him things about his life. And as she was doing it, and everybody's going like, ooh, I was like, but can't you all see that he's reacting to what she's saying in such a way that she's just simply reacting to him reacting? She's just giving his life back to him.
Those are the spirits. You're seeing the flow.
Exactly. Right, right, right. So, you know, for me, historically, I always think of like when people are perhaps talking about spirits, and I think maybe this is what you're saying, Mick, is it's easier to call that a spirit because not everybody can do it. But those of us who can see something that no one else can, and because no one else can see it, it doesn't exist. So it becomes something else. I mean, that's the way I've always thought about it.
It becomes impossible to reference in the collective reality that is comprised of a set of rules and definitions.
But there's already a definition for this. There's the umbrage, like your range of what we can see, like, there's that's already right. A term for it, like in the fact that like bees can see in ultraviolet or whatever it is. So their umbrage is slightly different to ours, but we can only see in the visual range and hear. So just because something is outside that range for us, I wouldn't start to use terms like spirit and things like that.
Because
the reason to avoid it is because it's making it seem unnatural. And it is very natural. It's just slightly different to the other one. Like, it's like you're saying we can see in a slightly different spectrum of emotional reading than other people do. So sure. I wouldn't say one of them could see spirits. It just seems like a very...
I think you just don't like that word, Michael.
I don't. It's too connected with magic and religion and these...
Yeah.
Baseless systems, kind of like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, Mick. I was just going to say, I'm not sure. We'll find out in a moment, I guess. But I'm not sure Mick is actually saying let's use those terms now. But I think historically, that is perhaps.
I'm not sure. Okay. I think what I'm saying is that if the nature of the problem is situated in an irrepresentable space, then how are you ever going to solve it with a representable solution? In other words, I'm not saying supernatural. You're saying supernatural. I'm saying spirit. And I chose that word specifically because it's going to elicit a specific response. You're going to be like, no, you can't do that. And I'm going to be like, okay, but you trust me. At least enough to just think about maybe I'm not totally like making it up, right? Maybe there's a thing here. And if you give me that trust and acknowledge that maybe it's your understanding of spirit that can change to make this make sense, what that gives you is not just this word, but connection to an entire set of practices grounded in generations of humans that were rooted in pre-colonial ideas of community and identity. That's how they talked about it.
Okay, that's an interesting.
I'm so excited.
I'm sorry. What? Say it again. Tango, what'd you say?
Oh, I just said this has me so excited.
Oh, cool. Oh, this is great because it's like there's Tango on one end and there's Michael on the other.
No. Mine was actually literally a clarification question. That's actually quite a good explanation of what he means by spirit. I was taking a very traditional view of the word spirit, like. Literally a ghost or a specter or whatever. Oh, but what his thing is more explaining that we used to use different words for the same stuff. We just didn't make it so scary and strange. It was just like, yeah, he just sees differently to us. But yeah, so.
You look very happy, Tango.
I have so many thoughts.
Good job.
Like on the one hit, like the thing that's looping the most is that you've reminded me something I kind of forgot, which is like, I started studying astrology shortly out of college, which would have been like a decade ago. And just to prove it wrong, because I thought it was ridiculous and I was tired of my friends talking about it. And when I started really getting into it, people, you know, my other skeptical, you know, science-y friends are like, what's going on? And I'm like, it's a language for shit we don't have other ways to talk about, but it's pointing to like real phenomena. And I finally have like these words or handles so that we can have conversations so that I'm not just going crazy on my own. And then the one thing after that I want to add on, is that like, I wouldn't have gone on to study all of the psychology and spirituality and philosophy, like all of the trauma stuff and nervous system stuff and all of the work I do now that is pretty scientifically rooted, like came out of me just studying astrology and finally having this language for, yeah, things we aren't able to talk about anymore.
Spirits. Yeah, that shit's real. And like, that's exactly right. Like tarot, I love tarot because the fool's journey is literally a map to recovery from identity trauma. It has every step.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's the Kabbalistic tree of life broken down.
It's all of that too, right?
My favorite thing about the tarot is when you leave out the minor arcana and just deal with the major, and you take those cards,
the fool's journey,
and you lay them out into the sign of infinity, and then you've got the internal and external, you know, where the fool always returns to the same point of questioning, right? Internally, externally. It's just awesome, right? And so what's happening in this very moment for me is all of a sudden going, like when you said, you start off Mick saying, you know, like somebody says, do you love me or whatever, right? And feeling connected. And I've never felt connected in my life to like a bigger thing, really. Yeah. Because I've always felt like the outsider, whether I'm an actor, I'm always the person in the cast usually cast as the villain.
Robert, you're connected to something so big you can't see it.
What I was saying is in this moment, all of a sudden I'm going, now wait a minute. We know that there have always been autistic people. My favorite thing was people say, wait, why did autistic people all of a sudden they just appeared? And I've never thought about...
Someone wrote a book.
but I've never thought about the autistic people who came before me, came before us, and what they were doing. And now, I mean, I'm sorry, Tango, I should have realized this from stuff you were saying, but now the both of you are kind of working on me going like, oh, those were the people who were gathering herbs, and those were the people who were not so interested in what everybody else was doing. And they may have found self-selected or found the people that they got along with and made communities or moved away or whatever else. And they were always thought of as...
Where the community just valued them as a member of their community. And they also happened to come up with some great ideas.
Right, depending.
And have value to the community.
Right. They just don't have valuable roles anymore.
Their contribution wasn't cognitive at all. Their contribution was resolving the emotional turmoil between that couple and now, Robert, you're here today. You're their legacy, right? Like,
right. And it's just absolutely kind of like, fuck. Because I had never thought about that before. I've spent a lot of time on ancestry.com with a cousin, and we keep going through our family history. And ultimately, it's like, and so what? I don't feel connected. I've realized it's very hard to feel connected to anyone beyond your grandparents. You know, there's just like, look at this family tree. It's like, I don't care. I mean, like, yes, they had sex and that produced me ultimately, but I don't care. But the idea of somebody in a village out on their own doing their own thing is so awesome.
So that feeling, now imagine that you're that person living on the fringes of the village, living with your ability to talk to the spirits in whatever form you have it today. And instead of every relationship in your life being fraught with people forcing you to behave in ways that don't make sense to you and punishing when you fail, imagine if you were accorded a degree of dignity and respect and people took what you had to say seriously, even if they didn't understand it, because they knew that your role in this society was to say things they couldn't understand.
Or things that no one else could say.
Yeah, right? You are accorded a portion of the hunt. You don't go hunting. No, your contribution is spiritual. That, and it's real. And like, we live in a whole fucking world that, like, there's a reason, there's one story, one movie about this. Y'all are going to love this. There is a movie, Internal Family Systems Therapy, IFS. We familiar with this? It's a therapeutic modality that says you're not a thing, you're a set of things. Every feeling, every impulse, every thought that comes through, you have different parts, and they're all trying to help, but they're very hyper-specialized. They can only do the one thing. And there's a special part called the self, whose job it is to coordinate those messages and how to behave. There's a movie about an allegorical character who has identity trauma in exactly the way that I've described. It is a movie about a lost self who is trapped in a virtual prison made out of shame. And it is about the other parts of that self banding together to rescue.
This is the Matrix.
This is the Matrix. This is what they were doing. That's what it was. Neo is Trinity, is Morpheus. Morpheus is his faith. Trinity is the core self. It's a trans movie, right? Miles, the inner child, libidinal energy. You've got like Cypher is doubt, and Cypher attempts suicide and kills most of the self, right? The body survives. Trinity survives. The self survives. Neo survives. Tank, the community connection, survives. And that's it. Faith has been captured. What do? You go in and you fucking rescue faith because you can't live without it. You're autistic. That's how you access things. And then Neo becomes a superhero by, like, cognitively willing himself to get stronger. That's how the Matrix works. I'm just going to be better than the computer at the rules engine. But, of course, it doesn't work. He gets shot and dies. And then his core self leans over from outside of cognitive space and says, I love you and I'm enough. And that's the map. Neo stands up and he's not trying anymore. He's channeling like we're supposed to. The agents can't hurt him. How could they? They're just contradictions. They disintegrate in his very presence. This is a map to how we heal this, how you get in touch with your spirits. Like, it's everywhere. All of the art that moved you specifically, Michael, you specifically, Tango, you specifically, Robert, the shit that made you feel uncomfortable when you saw it when you were 13 and you were like, what the fuck is that? I don't understand it. I just feel weird about it. That was your body. That's your Trinity saying, hey, this, if you do this, it'll show you how to hear me. You need to learn to hear the spirits, accept the call of the spirits. And I don't know, I'm going down this road and I don't know if I'm coming back.
Do you mean this moment or do you mean this moment in your life?
I mean, I don't.
That sounded more all encompassing.
Spiritual journey and not a mental or emotional or psychological journey. I feel free in a way that I didn't know I could be, right? The growth keeps happening. It's like learning you're autistic, but also empowered. It's a different degree of liberation that I'm now chasing, and this is what I want to give people.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yeah.
Do you feel like, so you had a great job a while back that we talked about.
I don't like that term, great job. You had a job.
Well, no, I think
it was no job's great.
For an autistic person to work.
It was
bearable.
Well, no, no. Let me finish what I was going to say. As I remember it and understood it, Mick's job was he was working with in a place that actually recognized him and said, you know, we want to enable you to work with everybody else in this workplace who's having trouble and challenges fitting in, possibly because they're neurodiverse. And we would like you to be the intermediary so that they don't have to keep butting their heads against us. And you can help us understand what everybody needs so that everybody can, you know, so we can all not just do better work, but we can all be better people. How's that for an explanation, Mick?
It was a beautiful dream. It wasn't quite right. It's not that they gave me like the problem people. There weren't problem people. It was that they asked me to lead a team to do the glue work that I had been doing. more formally. And so they gave me free rein to hire people, and I hired a bunch of like neurodivergents. And then I told everybody, okay, now we've got a bunch of neurodivergent disabled people here, and that means some things, and here's what that means. And we're going to work differently and this and that. And then company leadership changed, and they stripped the company for parts and laid us off. And
that was a big change. You know, that was a really big change for you.
This has been a year. I got laid off twice. My marriage ended. And
oh, man.
It's been a lot. But I'm coming out of it after a pretty dark period, to be honest. And like, what I'm finding is that my own healing is inevitably wrapped up in talking to other people who are dealing with the shit that I have dealt with, right? I get that magic feeling back that I used to have when I was a kid of I can see the universe and it's all flowing in this direction and nothing's resisting and this is a good moment, right? I used to feel that and I lost it at some point, and it's because I was resisting. I'm the one that resisted. And so I'm just learning now to stop resisting. Just listen to the spirits. Like, let the damn thing tell me what it needs to tell me. Use whatever metaphor you want to use, right? But like, there's this place that I'm increasingly feeling like the online Twitter or autistic community has gotten kind of stuck. Is like, okay, we found each other. We've all told each other, you know, validated the shit that we needed to validate. We can stop validating now. It's time to like move beyond just talking about this life, right? Like, there's got to be enough. So who's doing the next step, right? That's the work. And that's, I'm trying to onboard people, right? I'm trying to start this coaching company so that when you go through it, you turn around and become a coach, right? Because this is not a hard thing. This is not, you don't have to solve every person's specific problems. All you have to do is give them permission to remember that they already know how to solve them. Like, time and again, people are just holding themselves back.
I'm going to butt in there with the don't stop validating people. People need validation from their own experiences. We have not hit the point where no one is experiencing a negative process. Hopefully one day we can stop worrying about having to do that. But in the meantime, I do not think we should stop validating people as we meet them and their experience.
We can't stop there, right? Because everybody reaches a local maximum. Okay, we're all validated. We all know that life sucks for us in these ways. We all know that everybody's going to be
us. If you get stuck there, you might just get bored and end up riding the drama triangle. Just get stuck in a victim mindset instead.
And then the other thing to remember too is that it's always interesting to look at the statistics of like, oh, you know, autism, the rate of autism is increasing. No, the rate of autism diagnosis is increasing.
Yeah.
That means every day there are, quote, new autistic people. And they are all starting.
Because we have a label, which is like a lighthouse that then people can now come towards. I know some people are getting annoyed, like, oh, so everyone's traumatized now. It's like, no, we have a better understanding of what it is. And then we can talk about it. And then people can meet around the lighthouse of the language. Like,
or have you looked around at the world? Yes, everyone's traumatized. Look at the state of the place. Like, that's not a just neurodiverse thing. That's everybody at this. Like, it's
exactly.
Well, so here's another thing I'm really struggling with. I am really having a hard time holding on to the word autism. I am starting to feel, because I did something interesting. I wrote some threads about ADHD, and suddenly I've got an order of magnitude more people retweeting and talking about me saying all the same shit.
You mean all the same stuff that you have said about autism, you're saying it for ADHD, and it fits.
It's also just not as stigmatized, so a lot more people will admit to it.
That's the thing, right?
Because it's what we used to do with the Asperger's, with the POD, all these other ones. They were just ways of telling parents your kid has something they need help with without them getting upset and overreacting, or their mother-in-law saying, oh my God, let's put it down or something. Like, so they kind of made up other versions of autism, which were just autism, but they didn't want to tell. Well, like, a lot of people don't want to have an autistic kid. but would be right. happy to have an Asperger's kid or like ADHD kid, or even though the two things will be the same kid. When if you give them the autism title, parents, some parents will worry and stress, whereas I think ADHD has been accepted for longer. It's been in the school systems for longer.
Yeah, but here's where I'm coming
from. And down, we can drug it.
Yes. Right? That's the thing. ADHD is solvable. You can be medicated. Mm-hmm.
And that's, that. Yeah. That's why it's more acceptable.
Really not good for you.
So I don't want to be using a euphemism for autism. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what is autism? Autism is a word that means self-obsessed. Yeah. Fuck you.
That's literally auto meaning, you know, looking back on self.
Are you effing kidding me? I spent so much of my life considering other people for them to say I'm self fucking absorbed.
This is the thing.
Holy shit, that annoys me.
Yesterday, ADHD people, nobody is told they're lazy more than the people with no executive function. Nobody is told that they lack empathy more than the autistic people who are literally modeling every person they talk to the tiniest detail. Yes. They tell us they lack empathy, right? Wait a second. The thing that they tell you is a negation of the thing they see in you that scares them. This is Darvo. This is just abuse tactics. You want to know who you are? It's exactly the thing that your abusers are telling you you're not. That's literally the outline.
I guess my question there, though, is why are these people picking on us? What is it about us that they want to pick on us?
They can control our behavior. They can get us.
What are we talking about?
Oh, yeah. People who have not healed their trauma / people who you want to refer to as narcissistic or psychopathic or what, like all of this language is
capitalist or any of those.
Narcissism is a trauma coping
capitalism,
style.
Right? The capitalist class, look at Silicon Valley. That's not a monastery. That's a farm. They harvest us. They lure in the autistic people. They pat them on the head and give them tiny doses of validation, knowing that these people will work themselves to death for them. And they do. And then when they burn out, they get thrown away and they lose their insurance and they end up. Do you know how many like fucking Apple geniuses I know who are unemployed and homeless?
Really?
Like, this is a thing. That's the thing. That's what Silicon Valley does.
I'm shocked.
Really shocked? Or,
not in the slightest. It's capitalism at its finest. Like, I mean, who expected any other outcome?
Right?
You're saying, Tango, about the military?
I mean, the military does it too with like their like high school ROTC programs. Mm-hmm. They like prey on the, you know, the guy, they really love the structure. And there's just so many things that appeal to the teenage autistic person. And then they just, you know, overwork them, traumatize them a few years in the military and spit them out.
And it's not,
I wouldn't know anything about that being an army brat.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Let me ask you this. Is it just the structure, or is it also that when you have the identity wound, you are primed to let somebody else tell you who you are?
Well, it's filling that void. Like something needs to come in and fill that void.
Yeah, you end up in the military because its job is to break you. Oh, you're pre-broken? Great. They must love autistics, right?
You fit in, yeah.
Now we don't have to even be mean to you. You're already, you'll just do what we tell you, right? But like the same thing, the exact same playbook is being used to recruit us into fascism at an alarming rate, right? Like, issue a little bit of validation to this person who doesn't know how to validate their emotions and is socially an outcast, sprinkle in a bit of misogyny in a video game reference, and you got yourself a pie. Like, it's frighteningly easy.
Well, that the identity, sorry, my brain is just stitching these things. I think sentence. I'm not sure how much of it is overlap or if it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like identity trauma and like attachment trauma is pretty much the same thing or like highly overlapping.
Same space.
Because basically like we are social creatures. Our nervous systems need to co-regulate to regulate and be healthy. And the main thing about a lot of autistic people not getting that is because we're around a bunch of neurotypical people for whom we're not getting the co-regulation.
Yes.
So that's, I don't know where I'm going.
You're exactly right. I do think that this is another way to talk about attachment trauma. It's also another way to talk about codependency. Mm-hmm. I think there's a rhizome
here. Oh, God, codependency.
Things are actually different manifestations of. And
well, codependency and narcissism are two sides of, like, they're just two different faces of kind of the same narcissism and codependency are two faces of the same trauma coping mechanism or trauma coping style.
Which is delegating who gets to be a person externally for the codependent person, right?
Such a good way to put it.
The narcissist is providing something. They're a surrogate for your embodied self, which you don't have access to. That axiomatic knowledge, the oracle asks Neo, are you the one? That's how she knows. What does he say? He thinks about it and starts talking about why he thinks he might be. And she's like, eh, you're not it. Sorry, pal. It's like being in love. You know it or you don't. Balls to bone. It's in your body. If you're looking out, you're not the one, right? Identity trauma, the identity wound is codependency. Like, tell me who I am. I have this void that is in the shape of instructions that you can give me. Why do we all like rules so much? Is that an autistic thing or is that the fucking trauma?
Like, is that the fascism link then, where the fascist leader becomes that ultimate, like, identity?
Every ideology.
I guess that's like North Korea, right?
And everyone's identity is just an identity, right? That's how ideology works. We're just really primed for it, except that we're also sort of immune to it in certain contexts, right? Because you will never make me sign up for a cult by explaining why it makes sense. I will see through it.
Right.
But if you had got me at the right point in my life and you had told me, you're a really good person who's trying really hard, I don't care if what you're saying makes sense. I'm going to defend you. And, like, that's it. We're an open book for abusers. The button's right there. We don't have any defenses.
Now, when you're saying we right now, you are talking to the people formerly known as autistic.
That's right. Okay. Now known as shamans, who are refusing the call of the spirits and therefore preventing themselves from integrating as whole people. And without the spirits, they have to find those spirits externally in the approval.
Well, because we've been told that what we've been doing is wrong. You know, it's that idea of, it's like, I mean, this is a very poor comparison, but, like, you know, when you're in Catholic school and you're left-handed and you're told, you know, you're slapped, you're punished, your hand is tied behind your back. It's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. Yeah. How can it be wrong? I'm producing the same result as everyone else, but the wrong way. So what do we do? What do we do? I mean, this is one of those things of just like, okay, I'm traumatized.
I suppose we look to history in that way. And, like, at legends, like, I think you'll enjoy this one about the, for example, they had lots of old legends and stuff about a lake where people went to go to get cured from what basically would have turned out to be many forms of mental illness. They'd go and spend time there and eat the watercress of this lake, and it would help cure them of their whatever magical being had got inside them or whatever. And so when the scientists went a little while ago to test the same lake, it had an unbelievably high level of lithium in the water. So, like, they were medicating without really fully understanding the same, well, understanding it in a different way too. And I think that's a kind of interesting way to look at how did people live previously? How were they successful? And how you can apply that maybe to your life. And if even that comes down to looking at, like, the way people used to farm in cycles where they didn't work all year, all the time. Mm-hmm. So they would have had more recovery time. So we could look at that and look why there was less autistic people in the sense that they didn't stand out because it wasn't pathological, because everyone rested during that period of the year and maybe they needed it more, but there was no discernible difference. They all went come summer back to the field and did the work. Yeah. And so, like, there's lots of things we could look back in history for.
There were people who didn't do the work and they were the priests or they were the monks or they were spending their time doing something else and it was fine. Right, that's the crucial
part. Saw it as valuable. They were like musicians. They
artists.
Yeah.
Yeah, or anything that helped move us forward.
And I think it's worth also noting that in the olden days, when people worked, they tended to work more or less in solitude. I mean, even if you're working beside someone in the field, it's not like you're having a steady conversation with them. And in the modern workforce...
Yeah, they didn't have open plan offices.
The modern workforce is all about social relationships, you know?
Yes.
And so before, it was probably never noticed that somebody was more quiet than everyone else because there weren't as many opportunities to see the difference. And I think that's one of the, and therefore, there's probably less opportunity to keep creating the trauma
that
I think a lot of people do now. What?
Sorry, I just understood Bartleby the Scrivener. That was the moment. That short story. Do you all know the story?
I'd rather not.
I would prefer not to.
I would prefer not to.
Okay. It's about
bring
guy
the
who runs
up to speed,
a house. Okay, it's about an accountant, Ebenezer Scrooge type figure, right? And he's got an assistant who's just excellent, the most reliable person he's ever met. He loves this guy, Bartleby. And one day he asks Bartleby to do a thing, and Bartleby says, "I would prefer not to." And he just doesn't understand, and that's the story. But that, to hear you talk about the transition from the non-social to the social workplace, fucking Herman Melville noticed it happening in real time and sent us a postcard.
Melville was, I'm gonna go back and read that again now.
Melville was pretty damn smart about a lot of stuff, you know? Really, really was.
Here's the thing I tell everybody, because the conversation gets to this point. Okay, now what? Right? Here we are. If you know anything about autistic people, you know that we solve problems. And we don't just solve it for ourselves. We're not wired that way. You know that if we're all drowning, treading water in this place, and any of us had found a way out, the first thing they would have done is turn around and start pulling us up. So either this is all we get, or we don't know how to see the maps that they left us. Where are the maps? They're everywhere. They're art. They're religion. They're all the fucking non-scientific things. It's everywhere.
Like the tarot's the fool's journey.
Yeah, that's not for most people. That's for the autistic person who discovers it and is like, oh, wait, so the moon looks like a star, but this is a trap. That's why this wasn't making sense. Now I can get to the sun, right?
God, I hate that I understand what you're talking about.
I like the pretty pictures on them.
the shadows on the wall, right? Those are fun.
Yeah, but you know what you're talking about, it just makes so much sense, right? Because it's like, why are certain people drawn to certain things? You know, if I hear one more person, I used to hear this a lot when I was performing and making stuff and all, and people are like, oh my God, you're such a genius, which I after a while realized simply means I don't understand what you do. That's just simply what genius means, right?
The word genius means you have access to something I don't. The word genius is like the genius loci is like the spirit of the region.
Believe me, sure. But the people who used to say it to me did not know that. It just was.
You don't need to know it. You can acknowledge.
Was just simply like, oh, I don't understand. Therefore, it's genius, right? Which is
it's like when they call doctors heroes. Like, don't fucking tell me. Don't use that word, right? You don't even understand what that means. Like, I am a genius, motherfucker, and I am a genius in ways you don't understand and are not valued, and I have been taught to hate myself for all the ways in which you're now complimenting me for, because I've learned to give you a tiny fraction of it that's sanitized for you. Like, you have no idea the degree to which I am capable of doing things that you don't imagine, right? And that's like... If I had heard myself a year ago say something like that, I'd have been like, mate, that's too far. You're like, you're full of yourself. This is odd supremacy or whatever. No, that's not what this is. This is like, there are things that only I can see, and I can't do what I'm here to do if I'm gaslit out of believing myself, right? Like, That's real.
God, what you're saying is making so much fucking sense. Just because I think about, like when I was teaching at Temple, mm-hmm. and doing a great job by all accounts, and it came down to, you know, like, so everybody agrees I'm doing a great job. I'd really like to talk about a full-time position. No. No. Why? Why? You know? And what you're saying just kind of reminds me of the same thing of just like, I haven't even begun. And I could feel like people are like, yeah, but we've had enough. We don't really need as much as you have. We're actually happy with what we have. So thank you.
Not less. Yeah.
And you can move on. Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry. So. It sucks. That's what they like. And when your society has no acknowledged role for the shaman, we've delegated that now to psychotherapists and tech billionaires. We think those are the people who get to tell us what's true. And that's crazy. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing that? They're going to kill us all with climate change. They're not trying to save us. They're building rockets and arcs. Like, somebody else, please take the wheel.
So again, what do we do? If we've identified the problem, I'm, you know, like...
Queer solidarity. The queer liberation movement. You know, neurodiversity didn't emerge all at once. Shamanism didn't emerge into modern life all at once. It started with left-handedness. And then it started with gay men. And then some privileged white women were like, you know, I'm kind of like that too, right? And so we started making rules for acceptable ways to be deviant, acceptable forms of neurodiversity. And then you got bell hooks and the activists coming out and saying, wait, no, the word is queer. We're not going to win this war by writing a new rule for every kind of person, because that would require as many rules as there are people. The word is queer. Flip the table. We're here for everybody, and if you don't know who you are in any other way, you're queer. That's what it means. There's a bell hooks quote that I love. She says, queer not as being about who you're having sex with, that can be a dimension of it, but queer as being about the self that is at odds with everything around it, and that has to invent and create and find a place to speak and to thrive and to live. That's neurodiversity. We found it from a different direction, but we're digging up the same fucking thing. So what do we do now? We join that fight and invite them to join this one because it's the same fight. We learn how queer people have been reclaiming their history. We learn how the trans liberation movement is going, because those are all autistic people too, by the way. Right? And we figure out how we can help them, because they're going to help us, because they're the ones in most danger and we're next on the chopping block in this cultural moment. And it's because whenever the fascists come into power, the thing they're really targeting is queerness in whatever form. They don't want people who don't play by their rules. They don't care if you're their enemy according to the rules. As long as you're playing by the rules, they can deal with that. But if you don't acknowledge the game, you are a fucking threat. And so they pick off the outliers first, and then they expand the selection, right? And like, there's a whole poem about this, and we're at like, I don't know which line we're on now, but like, it's not the first couple. And this shit's real. So this is where I'm going, is like, I think we bring shamanism to the queer movement and we create something that is embodied and also in tune with things that are not normally thought of as embodiment, which is what queer theory is grounded in, right? Queer theory gives us embodiment. That's what autistic people need.
I think there are a lot of people, most of the people I can think of are women, doing this kind of work. It's just that they're little solo entrepreneurs and they just have their own little, you know, sparse communities kind of disconnected all over the place. But people are definitely slowly doing this work and taking on this same, like you're on a, there must be some, I don't know, vibe, train of thought. You've also touched into it or whatever.
We're talking to Zeitgeist, the same spirit. Once you learn to hear the spirit, that queer spirit is there and it's singing to us and you can hear it. But also, if you go on Twitter and you say neurodiversity is queerness, holy shit. Like, I mean, y'all are just having me here. Yeah. If you conflate those, a lot of people are going to hear, a lot of gay people are going to hear that you're trying to call them back into the DSM and associate them with mental illness. And they just fought
that's,
real hard.
Yeah, that's just people who don't know the history of the word queer.
Right. But turns out a lot of people don't care too much about history and only react to how they feel. And so it's hard to have
especially
these conversations.
If they're on Twitter.
Right?
Sorry.
Oh, no. I mean, but, you know, the thing is, like, even if, so if someone is queer, they can also probably be neurotypical. And my favorite thing about neurotypical is realizing that most people who are neurotypical need to feel something first before they ever, if ever, appreciate the logic in something. So what you're saying makes, you know, complete sense for a lot of people, which is like, whoa, I need to have the emotional reaction first, and it's overpowering and overwhelming. And I can't get past that to the logic of what you're saying. So,
About neurodiversity.
About neurodiversity and queer. And queer. Well, you know, that queer is not, first of all, queer is not sexual. Queer is different. It's not sexual.
Well, I think, words work differently in different discourse. So, yeah, right. This is just one of those things where you have to, like, make sure you mention the context or something.
Yes.
Because you, like, you could be out at a club. Like, yes, you can still use queer as your, I'm queer, as you're, you know, talking about your sexuality or whatever. And so, like, I'm queer in the context of sexuality, and I'm queer in the context of, like, just being a human or neurotype or whatever as well. So
Nick Walker has the term neuroqueer for this, and she draws that distinction specifically. I still need to do some reading of her work before I want to comment further on that, but that's out there.
I've heard the term, but I haven't read the
and who is she?
Philosophy behind it.
She's great. She, I believe, created like the neurodiversity studies department in some California college and just started writing.
Berkeley, maybe?
Maybe, right? Like, just did the thing that we sometimes figure out how to do, which is like, well, nobody's going to give me permission, so I'm just going to call myself the expert and see what happens, right? And so she's published a lot, and it's excellent. Really worth reading.
This is an interesting thing to me, you and Tango, or Tango and you. I realize I used to think I was a thinker, and now I know you guys. I feel like, and you too, Michael, you guys are always thinking about reading, and I feel like I've done nothing to improve my life as far as like looking at what other people are thinking and doing and how that shapes my own thinking. I used to think I did, but I'm...
Yeah, you've not changed at all in the last 5 years at all, Robert. Nothing. No, nothing
that's
new.
That's not what I hear Robert saying. What I hear Robert saying...
what I'm saying is Robert has done a lot of thinking and has changed his vocabulary.
I guess what I'm saying is the three of you actively look for other thinkers. You are all thinkers, and you're actively engaging with the thoughts of others in ways that I am envious of.
I just enjoy arguing.
Let me comment on this. I'm gonna engage at a very real level here, right? And say something which is, you're a white man of a certain age.
Yeah.
You were taught nobody else's opinion actually matters. You were taught that very explicitly and for years. And the fact that you are even able to get out of that is a testament to your character, because that shit's real. And if you look around your peers, you will see that all of them just believe that. Right? The exceptions are staggeringly rare.
Oh my God, my high school just had our 45th reunion. I didn't go, but looking at the photographs, it's just like, oh my God, there's so much white heterogeneity. Homogeneity. That's what I'm looking for. It's just, but what I was saying, this wasn't about me. It's just like, I'm in awe. And at the same time, I'm like aware that there is all of this thinking that's going on, and there is all of this theory, and there's all of this stuff. And I'm just wondering what we do with it so that it actually, because one of the things I'm actually kind of glad I'm not in a university about is realizing that a lot of stuff can stay in a university and doesn't really get out to help the people that might benefit from it.
It's not where the wisdom is. It's never actually, the important shit is never in the institution.
No.
No. It's not that, like, I can't speak for Tango and Michael, but you're saying that we listen to people. It's not just people. I have learned through the difficult lessons over and over to listen to Black women, to listen to, like, trans men who are being, like, even more ignored. They're not even in the bullseye yet. Like, their experience is so different. I have learned to seek out not only other people's perspectives, but I had the great fortune of reading Victor Hugo's Les Mis when I was 16. And that book taught me you don't get to dismiss anybody's perspective because the sacred thing is the subjective experience and everyone has one. Right? I didn't go see the musical for years because I thought, how could they possibly do this for Broadway? And then my brother-in-law was cast as Gavroche in a high school production. And I'm like, okay, I'll go see it. And the fucking thing opens with a song that says, look down, look down, look down. And I was like, oh, they got it. Okay. You have my attention. Like, they did it. That's the thing, is learning. We get so trapped in our own trauma that we get so used to our needs aren't met, and you got to meet your needs first. But once you get to a place of comfort, if you've never had that, it might not even occur to you to then, like, see whose needs aren't being met that aren't like yours, because you've solved the problem, right? And, like, that's not your fault. That's, like, the programming that we get. But, like, the queer thing to do, the shamanic thing to do, if you stop resisting, is to look down, right? That's where the details are.
Hmm. Huh. For people who can't see what's going on, we're all looking very much into the distance.
Well, I'm here, right?
We're all looking each other in the eyes. Don't listen.
Oh, I couldn't tell. My glasses aren't focusing, that's all.
It's very interesting. I actually will have to think a little bit more on that, the concept. I don't know if I'm 100% on that wavelength, but it's certainly an interesting topic.
Don't let me tell you who you are. You'd be a pretty shitty shaman if, like, you just started listening to me instead, right? Like, that's the point.
You'd be a priest. No, sorry.
Exactly. This is the priest-prophet thing. Shamans are...
No, I'd be a lot less evil.
This is... I know you spent a lot of time on Twitter, Mick. I spent a lot of time on Reddit. Reading a lot of the subs about that deal with autism, or I should say autistic people writing in. And it's usually, you know, every day there are at least a dozen of the same posts of, you know, I've just found out, and, or I didn't get the diagnosis, or, you know, just tales of tales that are very sad. And I'm just like, I want to know what we do so that we could almost shorten the period that it takes to go from, I'm autistic, to, hey, yes, I'm autistic.
So my actual very sincere answer to this question, you're not going to like it, but
I haven't liked anything you've said, so it's okay.
We need to start a religion. That's the answer. This is a spiritual problem, and we are never going to find a spiritual solution within a rationalist frame. It can't be represented.
I, too, have also wanted to be rich. Sorry, isn't that the purpose of religion?
Here's the difference. Here's how... Okay, I'm not talking about a religion in the sense that you are thinking of it. I'm not talking about L. Ron Hubbard. I'm not talking about using my shamanic powers for personal gain. I feel bad when I do that, and y'all do too, right?
So you're talking more of a spiritual movement.
I'm talking about the mystic sect without the priests. Let's not even do that part, right? Because what we need is a religion for prophets, right? That contextualizes, hey, you're not crazy and you don't have to keep eating locusts here. Like, have a cup of coffee, sit down, right? Like, there's a context for you. You only feel like an outcast and outlier because there are no stories or places where you are welcome. Well, here you are welcome, right? And you don't front load it. You don't tell people, okay, you're autistic, right? Because that's going to bounce off six ways from Sunday. You tell people, hey, some friends and I are meeting next week. Why don't you come? I think you'd have a good time. All the fucking proselytizing bullshit that works really well. If the mission is to get people in seats so they can become in community and learn to love themselves and each other and thrive for the first time in their lives, yeah, I'll tell them whatever story works to get them exposed to it, right? But the trick can't be here's some knowledge. The trick has to be here's your community.
Which is ultimately what religion does best.
Yeah.
It when binds it's, people when it's together, working, it right? Which is, you know, I'm always amazed at the people are like, whose lives revolve around their church. And yet I very rarely hear them talk about spirituality. I only ever hear them talking about doing something with other people through their community.
Because that's
what it is, right?
Yeah.
Well, there are lots of religious people who aren't spiritual. So
people who just like the rules are religious, right?
They're just and doing the surface like, bit. Yeah.
And I don't know.
Your point of meeting other people because you like them, not meeting other people because they're autistic, is really interesting, yeah. Right? Because it's like, you know, when somebody says like, oh, I know someone who's autistic, you should meet them. It's like, why?
Right.
But if you
come to a get together of self-absorbed individuals, bring all your preformed biases. We'll have a great time, right? Who's going to take that invitation?
Yeah, exactly. But, well, I keep thinking too, and because we don't have any way of knowing that when we finally figure out that most of that autism is a lot more spread throughout than we
think. Where are you in the pool? I'm at 20%. What do you think?
I think it might be more.
That's what I think.
I think I'm up in like 30. I think.
Okay. Sorry, what?
How many
percent of the population is
autistic?
Oh. I'm at least 1 in 7.
So it's like 14%. The reason I'm saying 30 is I think there's a thinner barrier between the two. And now I'm thinking about everything that's been said and thinking like, right, there is no, we only have the monoculture right now of what is represented as neurotypical, but when they're actually
also. Like any sort of idea that we could scale, like, or have a idea of how many people are autistic, like, it, all you can basically go is in, so there's like a social scale and stuff, and 40% of the people lie outside the normative range. So there, by default, should be about 40% of the population.
That right. assumes that the term autism applies evenly to every hyper and hyposensitive
person. Yeah, and exactly. And what does it mean? Like, or even like ADHD versus autism,
let's abandon ship. Let's not even tell anyone we're doing it. Let's just stop talking about autism and let's start building this other thing, which is designed from the ground up as a community. Right? We are hardwired to be serving the interests of the community. We were born to tend to the emotional and spiritual needs of the people that we're in community with. We could use our powers, right? You could use your spirits to manipulate somebody into doing your bidding and it would feel bad. That's not who you are. That's not what you were born to do. It doesn't make sense. It's a contradiction. We are not designed to live alone. We have hardwired shit for serving and taking care of the spiritual needs of the people around us. And that's like what I'm working on now. And I'm going to be digging that hole for a while.
I
guess it sounds like, let me say a thing and then you can like correct me where I'm wrong. Yeah. It sounds like you conceptualize the spiritual as like really separate from like biological or scientific, whereas that's I kind of see them as like, just two different ways of talking about it or conceptualizing it.
Yeah, I think of, so I think GPT is a spirit. I think that when we say spirit, I think what we actually mean is way of knowing, right? Another person once told me spirit and story are the same word. Sometimes I think that's true. Think about what we know about, what do you know about ghost stories, right? A haunting is just a repeating pattern. You can't interrupt it, you can only dispel it. What do you know about the Fae? The Fae follow all of these arcane rules, but they can't choose. That's a human thing. Only humans can choose. All the traditions about stories about ghosts and spirits all agree about this. A ghost is just a story telling itself from start to finish and then repeating. So if you can listen to the spirits, what does that mean? That means that you're able to pull stories out of the air that other people can't. And sometimes those stories are about, like, you know, those animals over there. And sometimes they're about how you feel today. And sometimes they're about, like, the crops and, like, the weather. And also, for some reason, Joe was acting weird last week. And I feel like these are all connected. And I don't know why, but this is a thing. Right? Like, that's the thing.
And now you're explaining why we like to talk so much. No, I'm serious. I'm serious about this in the sense of, like, whenever I have been in a situation where I've become aware that person stopped listening to me, I realize it's because I'm just pulling stories out of the air. This thing happened to me on the way of work, and then I thought about this, and that's connected to this, which is pulling stuff out of the air.
Which is channeling the spirits that call you. And if you refuse the call of the spirits, they will torment you. That doesn't mean verbatim narrate everything they say to whoever happens to be around in the moment, but it means honor those things in some way.
Because, like, what I'm hearing, like what you're talking about, Robert and Mick, of, like, all the stories and things, I'm like, okay, that's correlative. I'm not reducing it, but it's correlative mm-hmm. with, like, the lack of neural pruning they say autistic infants have. You know, it's why we have all of those extra things we sense. We have all these extra connections to put the information together. And then I'm trying to understand, you're talking about being in resistance with spirits and things. And I'm like, is he just talking about trauma healing in a different way? If trauma is, like, stuck things, things you didn't fully process or feel, or things you're resisting, it kind of sounds like what you're talking about.
The way I conceptualize, I'm still developing the language, obviously.
I'm curious. I'm just poking.
It's the perfect question. Here's how I visualize it, right? When you have some experience that doesn't resolve, we call that trauma, right? Like, it's not resolving because the person you were in that moment was not up to the task of completing whatever needed to happen. And so a little snapshot of you gets taken, and it is now tasked for the rest of your life with just holding open this gap in reality, right? That wants to close. But you're in there and it can't close around you and you can't get out, right? All of the traumatic memories that you have, the things that come back, your CPTSD triggers, that's all of a sudden you're experiencing the feelings of that part, which is still present. And, like, autistic burnout, you know what that is? That's when you have spent every single part of your soul to hold open yet another thing and there is nothing left for you. That's what that is. There's no doctor who can help you with that.
When you say hold open another thing, do you mean hold open another trauma?
Yeah, right? I'm talking about resistance and flow and alignment. What I mean is, you're a story that wants to be told. And that story wants to be coherent. But if there's some plot point that happens that's dangling and unresolved, the story that is you is incoherent, and you as the author of that story are now holding things on fingers to remember all of the dangling threads, right?
Yes. That's costing tension.
That's costing you. That's your soul, right? And so, like, when I think about this now, I'm picturing fucking Doctor Strange, like, tearing open holes in the universe. Like, that's what that shit is. There's a reason we tell stories about magic. And the good news is you can heal. You just have to go back to all those places where there's a part of you that you abandoned and say, ooh, sorry, bud, come back, come home. Like,
yeah. Your point about holding things open or holding things under your fingers, I went through some autistic burnout a little while ago, and you just described it perfectly, which is the having to keep track of too many things that did not fit together, except mm-hmm. for me.
Too many exceptions, no exception handling protocol.
But it was also like, but they all, I was the hub. Yeah. There were all these things, and they only could coexist in the universe because I was holding them, right? Yes. And as soon as I let go of one of them, I would be called out for it. So I had to pick up two more things until I finally got to the point of like, I literally can't hold these anymore.
Yeah.
What an interesting way to think of that.
When you connect it to trauma and you realize, oh, that's literally a part of my soul, with all of the memories and feelings and thoughts that I had at the time that I no longer have access to, actually, because they're stuck back there. I am diminished every time this happens to me. The trauma is eating me bit by bit by bit.
Is that why people who lose their memories are generally so happy? No, I mean, my father had dementia. I've known other people who, you know, had dementia. And it's said, you know, as people with dementia get closer and closer to the end of their lives, they just become happier and happier because all of the trauma just doesn't exist anymore.
Well, a lot of your like emotional palette is really toned by your mindset. And so if they start to forget the things that tell them that life is depressing and terrible, then they suddenly are no longer feeling that.
Exactly. Right. I mean, I've heard about people who have to be told, no, you don't like that person or you don't like that food. And they're like, why not? And they don't remember. And even telling them that, they're like, well, why would I feel that way? I don't feel that way.
That's silly. Let them have the present experience they're having.
Well, yeah, exactly. Although there are those people, but anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, like reality is narrative. You are narrative. The spirits are narrative. The difference between you and other spirits is that you're still writing your story. You're the author as well as the story. You get to make choices at every single moment. That's the difference. That's why we're different.
Okay, because it's always about me. So in case you know, because I'm narcissistic, I think you know that. But what I just said
call it human.
Okay. I'm writing a story. I'm writing a story. And of course, I'm the hero of my own story. If you're not the hero of your own story, we need to talk.
You're codependent.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, then right. Yeah. So it just all of a sudden occurred to me, I just saw all these photographs of people from my high school reunion. We're all 63-ish. And every one of them looks like they've just thrown in the towel. You know, in the sense of like, okay, I'm 63 and now, you know, I'm retired. I don't know what that means. And I'm 63 and I'm literally building a bakery in my backyard because like, I'm 63. I need something to do. And I just all of a sudden realized in your terms, it's like, oh, right, because my story's not finished yet. I feel like everybody else is just like, I'm just typing the last few paragraphs, you know?
Yeah, society told me it's done with me now.
The narrative template that was handed them, and because it worked well enough, it fit just enough that they were like, sure, it doesn't fit us to begin with. So we're like, well, this doesn't work. So like early on, we're trying to like make our own template of work and love and light, like all of the... Right. We have to like make a whole new game board, like Game of Life style, and really making the like shamanism game board.
Each making a different one, right? Like this is my favorite part about all of this is that it doesn't feel like thinking; it feels like remembering. Healing feels like remembering.
Are you familiar with the other guys? Might laugh at me. Are you familiar with Ian McGilchrist's work? Does this name ring a bell? No. Okay. He has a long interdisciplinary background in like psychiatry, but also like literary analysis and all this stuff. And he has written two very large books about his brain hemisphere hypothesis, where the left brain, like both sides of your brain do everything. They just have different ways of attending. their how is different. So mm-hmm. your left hemisphere sees everything by bits individually. It's separate. It takes it apart. It analyzes. It re-presents things. Whereas the right hemisphere is like presencing things. It's more holistic. It's more like continuous. It doesn't really deal with concepts, because if you've conceptualized something, you've broken it off from the mm-hmm. whole of reality. He talks about how like our culture is very like left brain dominant and really encourages more left brain dominance. And the things you're talking about sound very like right brain tuned in. I mean, balance is key, but like the lack of cognitiveness, the feeling of it holistically, the knowing who I am without having words for it, like all these things sound very right brain.
The thing here that blew my mind when I realized it the other day, as I've been thinking about this stuff, right? We're talking about an identity wound in an individual, which divorces that individual due to trauma from any way of knowing that isn't cognitive.
Yeah.
The individual retreats into the cognitive space and becomes identified with the cognitive model of reality. It's a very useful tool. You can answer a whole lot of questions with it, but you're living in a guest room.
My friend calls it gray. My creative partner calls it being stuck in your own attic, getting locked in your own attic. Yes,
it is. And it's not just like your attic. It's like, it's not just that the house is bigger. It's that you're living on a whole planet. Right. And like the attic is safe, but who's out there tending to the planet? That's all you. And like, what blew my mind is realizing, yeah, our society, we just amputated everything that wasn't cognitive, and we called it the Enlightenment. Right? And then we did it again in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And we called it the Internet, and now AI. It's the same fucking fallacy, fractally repeating. Just ignore everything you don't understand. Insist that the thing you can model is the sum total of reality that could possibly matter, and ignore everyone who challenges that.
Decide you're really smart for thinking that, and that you invented transhumanism, and you're just going to move away from it all. Sorry.
Yeah, right?
I have some opinions.
And once you see it, it's like Elon Musk can make every dollar in the world and he will never get a good night's sleep because he doesn't know who he is. He's chasing approval from Twitter trolls, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Like, you talk about how easy we are to abuse and manipulate. The richest man in the world wears a big red button on his chest. All you have to do is tell him he's smart and he will drop $1 billion on you. Like,
do you have his number? Is he one of the people you know?
No, thank you. I don't know. This is, and like, you go to therapy, you do the work, you take the meds, you do everything every expert tells you, every fucking expert.
I suggest we get $1 billion and buy an island.
There's no island that can save us. That's what
there is. We'll call it like Europe or something. We'll just buy a planet.
No, this is actually really important because that's what they're trying to do. The climate change plan that each billionaire has is to withdraw to some domain that they can own and fortify.
Oh yeah, mine wasn't for billionaires. It was for autistic people. I think we do a wonderful job of running our own.
But I mean, separatism is often the first go-to when you come against a really complex thing, being like, I will go over here and simplify the problem. Like right. Ayn Rand's whatever.
Let me do the one autistic trick, the one weird trick, right? I'm going to move it into the binary rule-based model, apply my predicate logic, and then do what that tells me. And anything that can't be represented there, that any externality, I'm just going to lie and say isn't real, right? And that's the thing.
Drop it off. I think I had some weird, because I was very like, all science, all logic, religion is terrible, magic is dumb. Like I was raised like anti-religious almost.
Mm-hmm. Which is its own religious set of stories.
Exactly. And one day I'm like hiking in the woods in Alaska, and it occurs to me that like modern Western science is like horse blinders. So it's like really good at staying on the street and like where it's good at where it goes, but it had to cut out a whole bunch of reality just to be able to do that. And it like shook my trust in science to the core.
Science is literally just a narrative convention. It's a constraint on what kind of stories you're allowed to tell.
It's a tool and like anything else. Yeah. It's a useful
constraint for solving certain kinds of problems, but oh my God, did you all think that the only problems worth solving are the ones science can solve? Because no, and now I know why we're all going to die. Like, oops.
You know, talking about religion and stories and blinders and stuff like that. So in the 4th century, Bishop, I forget where he was bishop of, but now known as Saint Irenaeus. Are you all familiar with Saint Irenaeus?
No.
Oh, well, when I was in the 1st and 2nd grade in Clinton, Iowa, I went to Catholic school. I went to St. Irenaeus Elementary School, and I had a lisp so that I would say, people would say, where are you going to school? And I'd say, I go to St. Irenaeus. And people would go, what? Because we, I think we're the only four Catholics in Iowa, except everybody else at that school. But I a while ago was like, who the hell was he? Well, he was the bishop in the 4th century, who decided which gospels of the Bible, which books of the Bible would be, what would be included in the Bible. And what
the Council of Nicaea. He was the guy.
He was the guy. So he is the guy then who was like, yeah, it's too problematic to include all these other points of view because
levels of heaven. That's complicated. Throw that
out. Or, you know, or the, you know, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, or it's just going to complicate things. So we'll actually just keep these guys and some of the things they say repeat each other, which just proves it's true, but from different perspectives. And it is amazing to me how many people are unaware that that's what happened, that there was somebody who just simply said, yeah, we're not going to pay attention to this.
What's amazing to me is that you can literally inform somebody with evidence that that's what happened, and they don't care. That's the part that I'm just like, you're not.
That's likely. When you have to trace the nervous system stuff and understand like whatever framework makes someone feel safe, like basic logic will not get past that. You need more than that.
Right. Well, and
especially if you're telling me that the underpinnings of who I think I am are actually non-existent or subject to change or not, you know, I know this to be true, but it's not true. Well, then how much of me doesn't really exist? That's problematic. I think that's in some ways the hardest thing for people when they realize that they're autistic is everything I thought I was is wrong.
Yes. I think about very much about what World War I did. World War I shattered every illusion anybody had that their axioms were true. Right? The violence, the ontological violence done to the world when we suddenly realized in the span of like 2 decades that, okay, empire isn't real and self-evident and inevitable. God seems to be a lot more complicated than we thought. Okay, is there at least physical matter? I can hold this rock. Wait, what do you mean I can't know both the position and the velocity of an electron? What the fuck are you talking about, right? John Higgs wrote a history of the 20th century called Stranger Than We Can Imagine, which traces this, and he argues that the thing that happened is that we lost the ground. All of human society that was grounded in any of the things that, like, crumbled,
that we could commonly agree on. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened? Well, different cultures responded differently. In America, we decided individualism was the thing. And by making that decision, we figured out within a few decades that it was wrong, but the damage was done, right? That was a horrible mistake. But think about what's actually happening there and think about the stories we keep saying over and over again in this call. That trauma took away ways of knowing that identity was dependent on. Humanity lost its connection to its grounding spirits, right? So we talk about this in terms of modernism, which says, hey, some of those axioms that you thought were axioms actually fall apart if you press too hard. And then postmodernism comes along and says, oh, you sweet summer child, there's nothing you can look at that won't decompose. And then we kind of stopped there, right? Postmodernism had the last word for most of my life. Do y'all know about the new thing? Metamodernism is the thing.
Oh, sweet Jesus. What is that? Metamodernism says, what is that?
Okay, so I can look at a structure and I can remove faith from it and I'm left with just the pieces? Well, that sounds reversible. Does that mean I can create reality just by telling a story and then acting like it's true?
Yes.
Oh, so you mean like what's going on these days?
So yeah, it turns out the reality you inhabit is the reality you construct, and that's a fucking moral choice. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I construct a pretty good reality.
I just think that's true.
Yeah, but we didn't have any language for it. We're only now learning to tell those stories. Not representable in the rules of the Matrix.
Okay, but this is... Okay. My brain's going off. Well, because I don't know enough history behind the... I know this one other thing in my brain is going off, which is I learned a few months ago some lecture. I really wish I could remember where I learned this, about how, like, the reason the first, like, Abrahamic monotheistic Western religions were really rejected is because what the people believed at the time was like, there's a cyclical pattern to everything. We follow the wheel of the year, whatever. There are cycles. You just have to go with the cycle. You can't control it. And the monotheistic people were like, well, there's a creativity. Like you are, I'm not going to repeat this well, but the idea was like, you can break out of the cycle. You have like an imagination and we can create new things. And that's actually where the original clash was. And then if you follow it, things go horribly wrong where the monotheistic people aren't creative. They're actually now more controlled. And it almost seems like the people who follow cycles have more freedom. I don't know. And then what you said seemed to be like the metamodernism thing seemed to be like coming way back around full circle to the original idea.
It's all Hegelian dialectics all the way down, right? Like we're just God getting to know herself over time. There's like, yes, everything you're saying, like,
sorry.
No, I love it. It's all the same thing. Right. And when you learn to see it, it's just, you can't not see it.
The sound thing.
What's that noise?
Was that you, Michael?
Michael, was that you?
It was not. My mic was on mute.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Let's blame it on Mick. He's the new guy.
Seems fair.
It was coming out of my computer speakers, though, so...
It was a spirit.
It was a spirit.
Well, it stopped when you turned your mic back on, so it was a spirit telling you to turn your mic on and say something.
It must have been.
So now go play Warhammer 40K and laugh at, like, the whole mechanism of the machine spirit and realize, what the fuck did they build in Silicon Valley? They did build a machine spirit. That's what that is. They trained a machine to synthesize information and give it back to us as if it were a spirit, and then they sold you an interface to it. And everybody's surprised that most people don't know how to use the damn thing. They keep thinking it's a search engine. I asked it a question, and it lied to me. Look how stupid it is. Dude.
It's a language model.
It's not, yeah, this is a different, you don't know what truth is. All you're doing is saying, I don't know how to use this, look, right? But you don't seem to realize you're saying that.
Like, wait, truth isn't just aggregated information?
Apparently, no. Like, people think that truth is a property of a claim. But that's not it. Truth is a property of the relation between claim and ground.
Is it relation. Not a bit,
New word,
is
relation.
Truth not a bit like good and evil, a bit of a pointless word?
No.
There is no objective truth to anything. There's subjective truth from yourself. Yeah. There's no greater meaning. It's all subjective to the system that's running within, like, the hardware, the software, broken inputs, repaired inputs, like whatever that have happened throughout our lives. There's no objective truth. There is just in my opinion, the word truth is just a bit of a sort of silly word. There's no objective truth. There is
that. You can use different things with it. A statement can be true, but only in a context.
Boom.
Yeah, right? Only in a frame of reference. Relative. So there is no subjective truth.
Opposite.
Well, opposite. I would say there is. I would say actually that the whole concept of subjective versus objective stems
from objective
metaphysics. That actually that divide is an artifact of your perspective and not in fact a meaningful claim on the ontological nature of anything. But I do believe that we each have an interiority which is fundamentally inaccessible to anybody else except as we are able to communicate it. Right? And so...
Right. That's kind of like a primary concept, isn't it?
Well, think about the relationship between the version of me that lives in your head and me. Right?
Yep.
Think about the relationship between the version of me that lives in your head, the version of Tango that lives in your head, and the version of Michael that lives in your head. Think about how...
It's pretty crowded.
Those... each seem like an individual with their own subjectivity, even as you think about them, right? But they're all you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing about that, too, is when you realize, like, I think I know Tango, I think I know Michael, but I cannot project forward what they would say or what they would think or react, right? Because all
I can we, so.
Well, so here's the interesting bit, though, right? You're looking at a lossy projection from a higher dimensional space into a lower dimensional space of the same thing, right? But you're using your substrate to build that model. And so it's made out of you. It's literally you taking a part of yourself and turning it into the shape that you see of us.
Right.
Here's where I'm going to blow your mind.
Bring
you,
it.
Me, Tango, Michael, out here in material reality, what's the thing that's thinking us?
Huh?
That's just the greater God, like the but that's watchmaker theory.
It's not just that. We can actually... there's a whole metaphysics here that's waiting, right? This is actually string theory. This is actually high dimensional space collapsing into ever lower dimensional spaces through holograms captured in boundaries between each layer. So you ask what's subjective and what's objective. I kind of think that a thing is subjective if it lives in your head or something in your head, right? If it's downstream of that boundary, we call that subjective. And if it's upstream of that boundary, it's external and objective, but that doesn't mean two people can perceive it and agree to it, right?
Okay, yeah, that's a reasonable argument.
I am so lost.
So
y'all gave me a platform and an audience as I'm going through a spiritual rebirth, so that's on you.
Okay. I will make I shan't make that mistake again.
Sure. To be honest, it's interesting to hear and see someone shift through in the time of a shifting belief structure. It's a very interesting thing to see because I think most autistic people have experienced it at some point in their life when they've finally realized or accepted, second, that reality that I was given is not 100% perfect or true. Maybe there's part of me that needs to decide what the rules are as well and be like, seeing people change their cognitive belief structures. Like, I'm finding that a lot of the stuff I would have been a lot more rude about, like the whole fairies and spirits and stuff. But unfortunately, quantum physics and stuff is really messing with my ability to deny its possibility. Like, it's kind of annoying me. I'm like, no, I had it all locked down. It was fine. Stop the science there.
It did a number on us. Everybody thought that the nuclear bomb was the big thing that came out of the 20s. That's not what they're going
to
be writing
about.
I used
to like the idea of not being able to travel faster than the speed of light. And I like the idea of not being able to walk through walls. But they're not going to hold up much longer. Like, it's insane. Like, it changes, yeah, like the... Even the idea that you could definitively say, I would have classified myself very strongly as an atheist in the true sense of being anti-religion, as opposed, and but I wouldn't even ever call myself agnostic because I was fairly sure there was no God. It just doesn't seem like a reasonable outcome. But with now with quantum physics, I'm like, oh, well, that like means I just actually don't know anything. The odds are it could be either one. I have no idea anymore. Like, there's just...
This is the thing. And this, like, Kierkegaard, right? In the words of Kierkegaard, as translated for us by the amazing philosophical work Into the Spider-Verse, you got to take a leap of faith. That's what the movie's about. You can't look outward. Miles can't learn how to be Spider-Man from
other... It isn't about Peter Parker. I thought the whole purpose of that movie was to get Peter Parker on screen.
I mean, that was the... I think Butler Jameson would call that the unspoken actual subplot.
Oh, okay.
So here's where I am with all of this stuff, which is I don't know if there's a God or not, but I choose to not live. I choose to live where that doesn't make any difference to me. And people can discover what the hell they want about quantum physics and string theory or whatever else. And I just say, you know, but it has no effect on my daily life.
But it does.
It has one
love. You just don't know it.
It's magic.
Because walls aren't solid.
Let me put it a different way. I cannot, and maybe it's because I'm an old guy, I don't know, I cannot see where the knowledge of any of this is ever going to change my life, other than the fact of, like, there's all this shit I don't know. And that's given that I feel like I only have maybe 20 more years left on this earth, I don't know that I want to spend a whole lot of time worrying about all this stuff, because I'm not sure what knowing it will do or change anything other
than...
So
you might need a leap of faith.
The whole point is that you couldn't possibly imagine from where you are. Because
what happens when they offer you a trip to the other dimensions?
I'm not interested.
You don't have any idea what's going on.
I don't care. What?
What if everyone else decides to leave to go to the other dimensions? It'll have an effect on your life.
There'll be
not
more
much, you're autistic.
There will be more room. You know, I'm like,
I've got a specific heuristic, like a specific reason why I think you can be convinced that it's worth exposing yourself to these ideas. And that's this. I think that the size of yourself varies in proportion to how many questions occur to you given any given context, right?
Okay.
Because you cannot choose to act in a way that doesn't occur to you. So the most valuable thing that you can accumulate is actually not answers. It's questions. Because a question is an impetus to discover, and that's what you're here for.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that. Okay. So you're saying the questions about quantum theory, et cetera, are just big, big questions.
Well, they give you the ability to ask new kinds of questions. They show you dimensions you didn't know were there, right? So now you can cast a portal into that dimension from here.
Right? Or they can just make you aware that there is stuff you are unaware of more, which is a question in itself.
But here's the thing.
I think a lot of the movement I'm seeing is like when people are learning new quantum properties that's sort of breaking the way they had normally thought about how reality works. Mm-hmm. Now, they might not directly go like change their life by working with the quantum physics, but they turn around and ask other questions and be like, well, what other things was I believing about myself or the world that is actually false? And I see a lot of people like in the Instagram communities I follow and stuff, like people are using this as like new like self-building and reality built world building type stuff. They now like have more optimism and creativity and passion and curiosity just by being inspired by learning some quantum stuff, if that makes any sense.
And they're not doing science. They're using the language of it, but like your quantum exploration of self is a poem. And for like a quantum physicist to chime in and tell you that's not how that works, which is what happens, is like hilarious because like, I know.
But right? What you guys are describing is religion.
Well, there's a reason that people use religion for most of human.
Yeah, I'm not either.
You're not what? I'm sorry.
Describing religion at all.
No. I'm sorry. Right, I see. Answer. Yeah. Wait, who are you pointing to?
Everyone said no.
I said yes.
Okay. Oh. The reason I see what I just heard described was, when we believe in something that's larger than ourselves, even though we may not be able to understand it fully, it enables us, when we accept it as part of who we are, to become better people, to live in a different way, to be more...
I mean, accept that there is something I don't know, not it itself. It's the acceptance that it makes me aware of
my
lack of awareness.
And a lot of
people... So therefore can grow.
For a lot
of... like... Yeah.
For a lot of people, the idea of God is something I can't accept, but I can never know, but I accept. So
perhaps- all that is saying is that I see the value in that which cannot be represented within this frame. I accept that value may not be representable in language that I have access to.
Oh, sure. Right? I mean, I don't necessarily do everything you guys are doing, but believe me, I look up at the stars and I see a beautiful sunset or whatever. I mean, I had a really profound experience about 5 years ago when I was driving home late at night, not late at night. It was about sunset. And there was the most gorgeous sunset I had ever seen. The clouds were orange and it just was absolutely phenomenal, but not unlike ones I'd seen before. But there was something about that particular moment where I just all of a sudden realized, this is going to be going on long after I'm gone. There will be sunsets I will never see. And the sun and the clouds and the universe does not care that I am here this moment, and it will not care later because it just is going to keep on doing what it's doing. I realized how, one, I could say insignificant I am, but I also realized it's like, my God, if I don't make the most of every single moment that I can, then this is all kind of a waste. It's not quite the same thing as quantum theory, and it's not quite the same thing as religion at all. But for me, it was this kind of idea of there's something going on beyond this world that I will never understand. And I just always need to keep that present in my thinking, because then it really doesn't matter if the newspaper came late or not. It really doesn't matter what the percentage points are on Bitcoin returns or any of this shit, right? Because ultimately, this is all stuff we've made up because it's something that we can feel comfortable with because we think we can touch it. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter. So,
well, this is where the metamodernists come in and say, it matters exactly to the extent that you choose to act as if it does. You get to believe what matters.
Yeah, you're not separate from it. You're not separate from that sunset.
Oh, no.
I don't hear a moment of insignificance. I hear that's your interpretation. But you know what I heard? I heard that the spirit of the fucking sun came to you and said, I am here and I will be here long after you are gone.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's the opposite of the sun not caring about you.
Oh, right? It was not that the sun doesn't care.
But like what I'm trying to get at, though, right, like is... the way that we are constantly hypnotized in our culture to interpret these things is to focus on the insignificance, right? But what if you allowed yourself to think, wow, the sun could have talked to anyone just now, and it chose to talk to me, to tell me something about its fucking life. That's not insignificant. That's huge. That's a moment. It touched you, right? This was a spiritual moment, and your interpretation is totally valid. But if you had a different frame, you would still have been touched, but you would have interpreted that touch very differently, right? That's why the questions matter.
Yeah. I mean, the frame that I had was just simply it made me...
Sure.
it was a very emotional moment, you know, to just kind of realize like, oh, in the big scheme of things, and there is a big scheme of things, this is where we are. Yeah.
And you apprehended that truth in a non-cognitive way. And like, we can say that a spirit told you that, and nobody can say that you're wrong if you want to. That's all I'm saying.
I'll take that. I guess I'm feeling bad that I don't want to know more about quantum theory.
Well, you are getting on in years, Robert.
I know.
Quantum theory is a young man's game.
That's beyond me.
When all the papers first came out and everybody was talking about it and it was a big deal. God, when was it a big deal? When we were all talking about fractal theory and stuff like that, I started coming up with that too. And I was very, very interested. And then it very quickly got past my ability to comprehend. So I just said, okay, I don't need to know this. So I'm beginning to think I just really lack curiosity.
Or Robert, there's this thing called life that keeps us quite busy.
Yeah.
So like that could be a factor in it. If I had a room that I could go in and it would stop time and all that, and I had an internet connection inside that room, I would literally know everything on the internet because I'd have enough time to do it.
Oh, I have
step out for lunch every so often. I just live in there. Like, again, we have lives that go on that we have to do and you can't like be interested in everything. I've tried it. Wrecks your head.
I have a room with a computer and I go in it and time stops. But the unfortunate thing is I come out and time has passed without me.
Yeah, it stops for the room.
It stops for the room.
I'm grateful the world has quantum physicists and I'm grateful the world has like artists and bakers and all of those things as well. Like,
I think maybe
you're just like feeling it because the three of us are on a topic you're not on, and that's not awesome. It's also fine. Like we can't all be. Oh into yeah, everything.
No. And what you don't understand is you could make the most amazing sandwich or something for someone at lunchtime, and they go home feeling better, or they go back to their lab feeling better and have a breakthrough. You could have had participated in that more so than any of us sitting at home on the internet looking at what they're talking about or discussing it. The person who makes his lunchtime sandwich could be more viably important to our future knowledge than anyone else. Like it's
don't just make me a sandwich maker, dude. I happen to know.
No, but like my point is anything.
Right. And I happen to know that like back in the early days when I was making work and touring and stuff like that, I know that I change a lot of people's lives. You know, which is kind of nice to know. But it also is the kind of thing of like, and I don't need to do that anymore. So maybe making sandwiches will be enough. I'm sorry, Nick, I cut you off.
I didn't mean to like make it sound like I was shaming you for not being into quantum physics or whatever, right? Like the point is that individualism is the place where it breaks down, right? Every one of us, autistic people are specialized in ways that allistic people are not, right? So even if it's not obvious from the way allistic people can't organize and get shit done on their own, it's extra obvious when you put us into the mix that like it wouldn't make sense for everybody to live the same shaped life, right? It's good that some people are into metaphysics and some people are into quantum mechanics and some people are into baking, right? It's not, the ideas don't come. The breakthrough doesn't come from the individual. It comes from the system. It emerges from a system of interconnected shamans who are attuned to and sharing the voices of a wide diversity of spirits who all have things to say, not all of which is helpful, but some of which is deeply informative. And that's incompatible with capitalism, materialism, colonialism, right? Who owns it? Who owns the output? We need receipts.
I think, right? It's also incompatible with ableism. Quite frankly, yeah. Right? Because ableism is some kind of outgrowth of capitalism and Puritanism, you know, that you need to be able to do.
There's a right way to be.
Right.
It's all colonialism. It's all the same. It's the opposite of queerness, right? Like, it's like queer versus cop is like the dialectic here. And like, liberation is getting yourself all the way to queer, whatever the fuck that means for you. And then helping everyone else, right? There's a reason that in the Matrix, Who are the agents? It's fucking anybody. Anybody at any point who has not been physically separated and liberated from the structure is a cop at the time when you most need them not to be. That's built into the model, right? Mm. So we pull people out and the work is liberation.
We talk about a lot of things on A-Team Podcasts, and sometimes it's hard to keep up, even for us. You can find links and more information about some of the topics we cover in your podcast provider's description of this episode. Thanks for listening.